This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 379 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com, and joining me back from Western Australia, back in Melbourne, from CreativePhotoWorkshops.com.au, Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you?
You know, happy to be here.
Happy to be home, or just what?
Well, I'm just going to leave it open.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, just I'd love your time in Western Australia. It was a fun old 4 days. I did a I got off the plane, went straight to a photo shoot, did a shoot, we had lunch, visited two camera stores, did a talk on photography at a hotel, and then 2.5 days of shooting, got on the plane, came home.
Right. And where were the camera stores? In Perth?
In Perth, yeah.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. So the lovely people who own Camera Electronic, they have two stores in Perth. I knew the old one, hadn't seen the new one, and they're the people I did the talk for. So
yeah, cool. It was good. Awesome.
Much fun. Much fun was had, well,
and,
by me.
And was it quite chilly out in the wheat belt?
Apparently.
Okay. You were out in the wheat belt.
Yeah, but I don't feel the cold, so everyone else is cold.
Right, okay.
I think we were doing a sunrise shoot. It was about 2 degrees.
No, that is chilly.
T-shirt weather. It was lovely. So I was out there in my T-shirt. Everyone else was a bit chill. Here's the thing. We did a sunrise shoot and an astro shoot.
Right.
I don't know how people run landscape tours and landscape workshops. Because they're never anything but a disappointment. So the sunrise, not a cloud to be seen.
Right.
Not a single solitary cloud to be seen.
Yeah, it's the wheat belt, mate. It doesn't rain much.
Yeah, but hang on a sec. Astro, hardly a blank space in the sky to be seen because of all the clouds.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah, so it's like exactly the opposite. Yeah, it just drives you insane.
Yeah, right.
Or in my case, more insane.
Yeah,
we had a lovely sunrise, but nothing happened. You were on this nice lake with this dead trees in it. It's like reflective water and stuff. And but you know, nothing much happened.
Yep.
And then so we had this this evening shoot, and we got this tiny little speck of hole. We had 2 nights to do it. The first night was completely unusable. The second night was mostly unusable, but we went out anyway and managed to get like half a dozen really poor shots with lots of clouds in them.
That's disappointing.
Yeah, that's landscape photography, isn't it?
Yep.
Landscape photography. Well,
that's, I guess that's why you have these weather apps so you can see where the clouds are going to be at given points in time.
Yeah, but if you're running a tour or running a workshop,
absolutely.
How do you deal with this stuff? You know?
Well, I guess you have to be flexible on location. Like, as in, you know, to the tune of 100 kilometres.
Or more, that's the thing. Yeah, but if you're heading out for sunrise and you've got to, it's pretty bleak
if
you're trying to, probably because if you're trying to teach skills, you need some sort of consistency.
So
you could teach waterfall shots, no problem, because most of the time, water's coming over the waterfall. So that's not so bad, you know?
Yeah, that's reasonably predictable.
Yeah, if you're trying to teach seascapes or something, okay, you're going to get the flow of the water, but you kind of need something else going on to make it interesting. And I'm so glad I shoot people. Because that was the easy part of the weekend. It was very, very simple.
Dear idea. And did,
we
you
had
see,
a good time.
Did you see the pink lake on the road to out past Quarrity?
Yeah, except there's been so much rain, it wasn't pink anymore.
Oh, you're kidding.
It was like a lake.
Oh.
It was lake. Just a lake.
Dear idea.
But, you know, we had fun. We took some photos. We learned some stuff. Well, they did.
Yeah.
And we came home again.
Excellent.
And have you been? Been good? You've been sorting through your holiday photos?
I have. I've finished processing the single image shots. What I now need to do is work through the HDRs and the multi-image panos. And once I've done those, then I can sit down to start compiling the photo book. So,
nice. You've been putting some work in.
I have. I've been non-stop. So I've, out of the 1900 images I came home with, I've so far processed Sorry?
You like four of them. You like four of them.
I like about 650 of them.
Crikey.
So I'm pretty happy with that as a ratio.
That's ridiculous. out of 1,900, yeah. You're like a third.
Yeah.
Send them to me. I'll fix that problem real quick.
You and I have different criteria.
Let me knock it down to 60 or 70 for you.
I'm sure you would. I did want to follow up on the last episode regarding the travel insurance.
Yeah.
You were fairly, dismissive of my likelihood of getting anything substantial as a payout. And and on that front, you were bang on.
I was proven right again.
Yes,
don't tell my wife, she'll never believe it.
So here's what happened. The travel insurance basically allowed me to submit a complete list of everything that had been stolen and, the purchase value of those items at the time that they were new. Yeah. However, they said, for anything that you do not have a receipt for, regardless of its purchase price, we will only pay a maximum of $100.
Yeah.
And they had a depreciation schedule which maxed out at 5 years, and anything older than 5 years, which was pretty much everything, except for maybe Rakesh's R strap, you basically got about 40% of face value. So for the $1,700 worth of gear that I was claiming, I got a payout to the grand total of $519.
and you owe Rakesh $100 for a new R strap.
Yeah. So. A bit disappointing. But I guess it's better than no payout at all.
It is, absolutely.
But it's certainly not going to replace everything that I lost.
I mean, if you've got no receipts, no serial numbers, it's just your word.
Yeah, yeah.
Effectively.
I mean, I could prove ownership of the 20mm lens by supplying, thousands of images with EXIF data that proves that I owned that lens, but I don't think
it doesn't prove that it was stolen.
No, that's true. That's true.
It's all your word.
Yes. Yeah,
which I guess is, on any theft report, I guess it's just your word anyway, because you could just be telling porky pies that it was stolen. And
exactly.
He might have it at home. He didn't even bring it with you.
Yeah, exactly. So I ordered another secondhand 20mm Minolta wide-angle lens today off eBay. Got this one cheaper than the last one. Paid $275 for this one. So
that sounds all right.
Yeah, so given the age of that lens, they're about a 30-year-old lens now. So, but given how often I use that lens, I was happy to splash out and buy another one
for under $300 to replace. It's good, isn't it?
Yeah. So I'm thinking I will replace the Yongnuo flash that I lost with a newer model. The one I lost was a 560 Mark II, I think. I could get a 560 Mark IV, but I realized that they've also released now a 660, which has a guide number of 60. 66, where the 560 was a guide number of 58. So I might go for the 660 just for the extra oomph. But yeah, we'll, and I figure for the rest of the stuff, I'm just going to tell family and friends, hey, for the next birthday and Christmas, throw me some cash because I need to replace all this gear. So. Yeah, it's just going to be a slow process of just building it up over time again. So
which is good. Yeah, it's not a bad thing.
Yeah, exactly. But interesting thing, I went into my cupboard during the week. I've got a cupboard here in the study where I have a one half of a shelf that's just full of old photography paraphernalia. There's an old analog SLR body in there, and there's a bag of old filters in there, and. And what did I find? About an 18, 19-year-old Tamron 28 to 200. So it's only like a kit lens. It's not like a 2.8. It's a, I think it's...
Yeah, of course not. There's no such thing as a 2.8 that sort of size.
No, over that range. It's like 3.8 to 5.6.
Yeah.
That has been sitting in my cupboard and following me around the countryside for the last... Well, I haven't used it for 12 years. And I know it has. Yeah. I know it's been 12 years because it's a lens designed for a 35mm sensor. And when I got my Konica Minolta 7D in 2005, which is 12 years ago, it came with two kit lenses, a 17 to 70 and then a 70 to 300, the lens that got stolen in Paris. And so when I got those two lenses, this Tamron lens just went into the cupboard and got forgotten about. And I just discovered it through the week and went, oh.
Well, that's nice.
I'd forgotten about this lens. And I'm actually thinking, you know, that if I was to go travelling again, as I will at some point, I reckon I'd
And you leave your gear behind, you could leave that behind as well.
Well, I was thinking I would probably be able to travel with just two lenses, and that'd be the 20mm. And this 28 to 200.
Yeah, awesome.
And I reckon between those two lenses, it pretty much would cover me for everything that I want. You know, missing the distance between 20mm and 28mm is not really going to break anybody's heart. You know, you could shoot at 28mm and just crop in if you had to. Shoot at 20mm and then just crop in if you had to. So yeah, so that lens might actually get a bit of use from now on, I think.
Awesome. It's a fine enough lens, so why not?
Oh, I put it on my 850 for the first time through the week and just fired off a couple of test shots and went, yeah, I really like this lens again. I'd forgotten I had it. So anyway, but that also brings me to a little comment that appeared on the Facebook wall through the week from Ian Collard, who said to me,
yes,
Bruce, as Glyn would say, I think I'm about listener number 8 to your podcast. Sorry to hear about your camera bag and Glyn's pessimism about a successful insurance claim. Well, as we've just heard, Ian, he was pretty much on the money.
He says pessimism like that's a bad thing.
I too shoot Sony and as a consequence have the Minolta 75-300 lens that you're welcome to if it's of any use. I also have a Sigma 18-250 that I no longer use as it's an APS-C lens and I now have a full-frame A7 body. You can PM me if either of these are of use to you. Ian, thank you so very much, mate. That is a very generous offer. I'll decline for the reasons
Why?
Just mentioned. Well, I don't know.
The 75 to 300?
Yeah. Yes, certainly there's an extra 100mm on the end of it, which, you know, I'd use occasionally, but not often.
Yeah.
Look, it's a lovely offer, and I'm genuinely touched, Ian, that you would consider offering that lens to me. Thank you so much. I really do appreciate that. Maybe if I want to borrow it at some point, I'll reach out and we'll work something out.
See, we might only have 8 listeners, but they're lovely.
But they are good people.
They are indeed.
Now, David Foggan reached out as well in the last couple of days and said to me that he's involved in a kind of an exhibition-y thing. He's involved as both a shooter and as a marketer for the exhibition and asked, would we mind giving it a bit of a shout-out on the podcast? And I said, yeah, absolutely. Send me an email. So this is the email that he sent us. Hi, Bruce and Glyn. The exhibition is called The Collective. It's a collection of photography work by 34 online students from across Australia who are studying for their Diploma of Photography and Photo Imaging with CATC Design School. The students come from various backgrounds and are all of vastly differing ages, from those in their late teens and early 20s to those mature ones like me in their 50s. The exhibition will contain works on various themes from the Australian landscape through to social and environmental issues and portraiture. It's a great opportunity for members of the community, not just photographers, to see some great work from students and possibly purchase some pieces of art. The exhibition will run from 7pm on the 17th of August, end date to be confirmed. Please like and follow our Facebook page to be kept informed and to be advised of the online location for the exhibition. We are testing platforms at this moment in time. And it's facebook.com/thecollectiveexhibition. I'll put that link in the show notes. I can be contacted by email, david@davidjamesphotography.com.au, if you require any further info. Thank you again, Bruce and Glenn, and the Shutters Inc. audience. I hope we're in double figures by now for your support. Best wishes, and thanks again, David J. Foggan. So, yeah. Like I said, that link for the Facebook page will be in the show notes, so go and have a look at that and have a look at the work of these 34 photographers. Was yes. there something you were going to add to that, Glenn?
Well, no, I was just thinking if we should do a bit of quid pro quo.
Which is?
That if we promote their exhibition, they should be forced to listen to our podcast.
All 34 of them.
30. Well, hello. Quadruple their numbers, like bang, you know. And they've got to have like at least a 12-month subscription. They can't get out of it that easy, you know. Yeah, better than that.
They might just say, it's okay, we'll promote it ourselves.
I'll be able to take this. I'd actually be able to promote this to my sponsors and actually tell them I do a podcast rather than never mention it. Yeah, I don't want to check the figures and go, we won't bother dealing with him.
Now, before we move on, I just wanted to mention one other thing. One of the things that I lost when my camera bag got stolen in Paris.
Your sanity, your patience, your temper.
And my trigger trap cable.
Oh, no, and they've gone now.
And they've gone. You can't buy the cable. And so now I'm wondering what other products are out there in the market that are similar to or the same as what Trigger Trap was. See,
what were you using it for?
Well, probably the thing I used it a lot. Shouldn't say a lot, but I used it, you know, a bit.
It had been used.
And when I used it, the feature I used the most was the ability to do longer than 30-second exposures.
So an intervalometer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, either from you, Glenn, or from the listeners, has anyone got suggestions of other products that I should check out?
Yeah, cable release.
Okay.
You press the button, then you lock it.
Yeah, I know, but that's a one job thing. Like
all you're using it for. You're only doing one job with it. You're only doing
it. I at least had the potential to use it for other things.
But you never used it. My car can do 200 kilometres. I just don't do that because I get in trouble. In theory, I can go and get a real job and do real work. There's potential all over the place. It's not going to happen.
Okay.
So if you're only using it as a cable, well, so what other things would you want it to do? Come on, let's be serious.
Now you're putting me on the spot. Hang on. Let me fire up the app so I can remember.
No. If you can't even think of what you could use it for, buy a bloody cable release.
You know what? I think I uninstalled the app.
Speaks volumes.
Anyway, if anyone's got suggestions.
If anyone's got a listener of a multi-function device where Bruce can only use one function on, where he can pay 10 times more than necessary for said things, just in case one day he enables an app and actually downloads it and possibly wants to use it, let him know. There's a bunch of triggers. I saw a good one the other day. Pluto trigger, I think it was called. Check it out.
Pluto.
It's called Pluto triggers, and I thought that looked pretty cool. Yeah, just so you could use your cable release function on a more expensive gadget.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just think of maybe Pluto trigger, Pluto. But, yeah, just Google something around Pluto.
Am I right in thinking there's one called Nero? Well, maybe I'm just imagining that. Anyway.
I think it was the Egyptian one, Faro. Nero and Faro. So here, the Pluto trigger.
Okay.
It does stills. It does time lapse. Does star trail. Does HDR. Does video. Does sound. Does laser. Does lightning. Does proximity. Droplet, shake, smile, and motion.
So a lot of those things, Trigger Trap was capable of doing as well.
Awesome. And cool. How many did you use?
One.
Because let's face it, if you use the lightning trigger,
yeah,
Well, the machine took the photo, not you, so yeah, there's no fun in that.
Yeah.
The droplet one, same. The machine took the photo. Smile detector, it only takes a photo when the...
You could say the machine took the photo.
Well, really, the
even the intervalometer, you could say, well, the machine took the photo.
Time exposure and the cable is you press the button down and it opens. You unlock the button and it closes. You're doing it, really. It's like pressing the shutter button, but on a cable.
Okay.
So Pluto trigger. Have a look and all the things you could ever possibly want a trigger to do and not use.
Beautiful. Excellent.
But let's see if we can find some other suggestions from listeners who are actually out there using them.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And just on a side to that, when they use these features, how does it make them feel?
What do you mean?
Do they feel somewhat, well, I wasn't really involved in the process?
Oh, okay.
I mean, do they feel satisfaction at the image of the balloon bursting with the pin when the machine took it rather than you?
I would say I would if I was doing something like that because it's still a sense of accomplishment, even if...
Why? How? That you put a pin into a balloon? How is that a sense of accomplishment?
Well, just capturing image. I don't know.
But you didn't capture the image. That's the whole point. The machine did.
You set the machine up to do it.
You aimed a camera. It's like pressing on the remote control on the TV. You didn't actually turn the TV on. The little remotes did. They scurried over there and did it for you.
Well, you could say the whole thing about pushing the shutter button.
No, because you're choosing the moment. You're pressing it at the moment.
Yeah, okay.
This is, you could be off having a beer. And every time the lightning goes, the camera just triggers. Well, what's the fun in that?
Okay.
But then you come back and see what lightning there was.
You're focused on a single moment, but how do you, what's your answer to, you know, the people like me who like to do long exposure stuff? You're not just capturing a single moment.
Cable release.
Yeah.
You're pressing the button down at the cable release, and you're choosing when to unlock it. All that is your shutter button on a cable. Okay. So you're still pressing the shutter.
Okay.
You don't agree? Well, put it this way. Okay, let me give you an alternative. You're up at the bar. Your camera's down by the water. You open up the app on your phone. You hit start.
Yeah.
You stay there.
Yeah.
The bar. And when you decide you've had enough, you press stop, go pick up your camera and go home.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just old.
Because you still had to compose the shot and decide what angle you were going with, what focal length you were going with, what aperture you were going with. There's still an element of creative endeavor on the part of the photographer. Even if you're not physically pushing the shutter button, there's still an element of creative expression in that.
But only in composition. I agree. I agree for time lapse, and I agree for star trails.
Mm.
But if you're doing lightning, well, you're composing a scene where the main star isn't there.
Okay.
All and right. you might fluke that the main star shows up.
Okay. So lightning and pin pops and water droplets and all that stuff. You're utilizing technology to capture a moment of time that is so short, you cannot possibly achieve it with your finger because...
Rubbish.
No, it's not rubbish.
Well, people took these photos before these devices came out. People were doing balloon popping photos.
Yeah, 20, 30, but by doing 1 second exposures.
Oh, no, really? Or they were doing fast ones and just made me missing a lot.
Yeah. Right.
But then doesn't the satisfaction of getting it be elevated to so much more?
Okay, Glenn,
every single one of them.
Why do you drive a car? Why are you utilizing technology to get somewhere else when you've got two good feet? You could just do the walking yourself.
Either way, I'm still involved in the process. No, it doesn't matter. I'm still involved in the process. The only process,
how's it different?
Well, the only process is, say, between driving and this is, and the say balloon popping, is I'm the person pressing the lights that's slowing me down. Because all you're doing is putting a pin into a balloon. The rest is out of your hands.
Yeah.
So you're not really taking photos, are you?
All you're doing in the car is you're sitting on your bum and you've got your foot resting on a pedal.
Steering, choosing to go or to woe.
Yeah, so that's focal length and composition.
And choosing whether to run over someone or not. That's the popular... You've got to admit, there's we're talking about a creative, artistic pursuit, and then you have no involvement in capturing the moment.
Yeah. We'll agree to disagree.
Okay, well, you go and buy this Pluto and don't use any of those streak features, and when you don't use them, tell me how it feels.
Okay.
But seriously, I would like people, anyone who's done it, because I've never done it. I could be completely off my – probably am – completely off my gourd, and it could be a fabulous experience to stand 20 feet from your camera and watch it take a photo of the balloon you just popped. Could be sensational. Now, I've heard Mr. Collard. We should dedicate this episode to Ian Collard, by the way. I think call this the Collard and Greens, we'll call it. Collard vegetables and greens. It doesn't matter. It's a southern food of America. Collard vegetables and greens.
Okay.
So if anyone's had that experience, let us know how it felt and stuff like that, and versus the joy when they do something and capture it themselves.
Okay. Yeah. Now, over the last few weeks, Adam has posted a bunch of different stories to the Facebook wall.
Look at me.
So I thought we'll belt through these. The first one is a free Photoshop course comprised of 33 videos on YouTube. The link is to a petapixel.com article about the same, and they have embedded all 33 of those videos in their blog post. So I'll put that in the show notes.
It's funny, because I read it as 32 videos, and I thought mine must be better than his because it's one less. it's the same article. I must have just misread it. But that's an awesome – if you're starting out, that's brilliant. What a great resource.
Definitely. The next one is photographer sues Procter & Gamble over copyright in a $75+ million case. Now, I had a brief read of this just before we started recording. It's all about 46-year-old photographer Annette Navarro. Now, what I find a little bit dubious here is she's claiming that Procter & Gamble are in breach of the contract that she had with them to use some of her images, which she shot and originally licensed to them for North America for a period of 3 years. Now she's claiming they've been using them for 14 years and worldwide. Now, I kind of think this is a bit like the whole, you know, copyright infringement of Men at Work's Down Under song. I feel like there needs to be a statute of limitations on these things, because to wait for 14 years and then suddenly go, oh, hang on, you're screwing me.
But you should wait for enough years to build up to make the lawsuit worthwhile.
Which is exactly what I mean. It seems frivolous.
But she may not have been aware.
Oh, come off it.
Well, you could be busy. You could be doing other stuff. It might only come across an advert that you see. I'm serious. It could have happened.
Well, I mean, she's claiming that she was only alerted to the unauthorized use by modeling agencies.
There you go.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm still not buying it. You license these images for 3 years, and it took another 11 years to notice that they were still using them? No.
Could happen.
If you're asleep at the wheel.
Well, it depends on it depends on what markets they were using it in.
Yeah.
So they could say if someone was using your images right now in the Middle East, would you know?
No.
If they're printing billboards up around the Middle East?
No, I wouldn't.
No one would.
No.
So it is possible. I mean, I'm sure that would have been investigated and taken into account, whether it's a frivolous lawsuit or not. Yeah. I mean, I think she might be a little rich in what she's asking for. Yeah. 75 mil. But it doesn't mean it wasn't the case.
Yeah.
That it hasn't been used. So it depends on what markets they've been using it, how they've been using it, what sort of things they used it with.
I'm just thinking.
We're talking about some like Procter & Gamble, which are a worldwide company, have stuff all over the place.
But that's my point. If you were a commercial working photographer and you had licensed images to a company like Procter & Gamble and had licensed them for a three-year period, would you not be doing your research around the four-year mark to make sure they'd ceased to use them if they didn't pay a rollover
fee? Thing is, she may have contacted the people she dealt with and said, okay, the license is up, do you want to renew? And they said no, but that's Department A, and then there's Department B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, all around the world. And Department M in Libya is still using the images. Yeah. You know, it can happen. In these huge companies, I believe it can definitely happen. I don't have a major problem with that. I have somewhat of an issue with the volume she's asking for, but yeah. You know.
Well, I guess that comes down to how much use has gone on and across
and how
big a market. Well, yeah, I don't know. Presumably she's, you know, employed lawyers and whatnot to go and find out how much, you know, unpaid usage has occurred, and presumably that's where they've come up with the number. But anyway, yes, anyway. The next one was about Adobe's Project Nimbus. Now, the story says that an internal-only version of Project Nimbus, which allegedly is like Lightroom in the cloud, according to the heading of the blog post, an internal-only version of Project Nimbus was apparently accidentally made available to a number of Creative Cloud subscribers. I'm sorry, I'm not buying that for a minute. I don't believe that this was accidentally released to some Creative Cloud subscribers at all. Sorry, not buying that at all. I reckon.
So what do you?
I think it was an intentional leak
to get people talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Oh, it can happen. It can happen.
What, an accidental release or a deliberate?
Both. Yeah. I'm sure Mr. Apple's, but who are the most tightest secure company in the world for stopping leaks and stuff. Every single phone's leaks before it gets out.
Yeah.
So I mean, it is possible, but I think it could be just a bit of publicity. The only way to verify that is how long it takes for them to get it out.
Well,
so if that's another 3 years before it comes out, it's kind of a complete waste of time.
Oh, as in when the actual program ships?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if that comes out in 3 months, it's a nice lead time.
Yeah.
So let's just watch this space show.
Yeah, exactly. Next one, federal judge refuses to toss out the lawsuit against controversial photographer Richard Prince. So basically, Prince had tried to have his case dismissed, and the judge overseeing the case has gone, nah, you've got a case to answer for. So this, again, will be interesting to see where this goes. For those who don't know who Richard Prince is, he's a quote-unquote artist who steals people's Instagram photos, blows them up large, prints them on paper or canvas or something, and then displays them as, you know,
his own art.
A gallery of his own art with basically no manipulation or very minimal manipulation from the original work. And that is exactly what the judge said. While Prince and Larry Gagosian, the owner of the gallery that featured the exhibition, argued that the work is transformative, in issuing an opinion, United States District Judge Sidney H. Stein wrote, "The primary image in both works is the photograph itself. Prince has not materially altered the composition, presentation, scale, color palette, and media originally used by Graham." So, I hope he gets his just desserts, because I don't think he's really contributing anything to the art world.
That's
just me.
So subjective.
Well, yeah.
The way the world's going around art.
Yeah, absolutely. Next one was, a photographer uses the onboard safety camera in her Volvo, I think it was an XC60, to capture her images. So this woman has basically published a collection of photographic work, all photographed from the safety camera of her Volvo. So it's car's eye view of the world, if you like. Yeah, something different. I'll leave it for anyone that's interested.
Once again, art.
Yes, exactly.
So-called art.
Exactly. And the last one, this will certainly inspire wrath, hatred, or admiration, depending on your point of view. Why I chose the spit and scribble photograph, Olive Cotton, judge, on the global furor. So I think most of us would have heard of this portraiture award, the Olive Cotton Award for Photographic Portraiture. This image was given the top gong, and it's, yeah.
Yeah.
It's called Maternal Line, and according to, you know, the guy who's writing this, who was the judge who awarded it the top gong, Maternal Line is a beautiful photograph. Its purple and green palette has colours and smoky metallic effects I had never seen in a photograph before. Over this coloured ground is a series of marks ranging from light blue to dirty brown, from thick to thin, that seem at once deliberate and nonsensical. These marks had been made with a range of pens and saliva by the artist's elderly Hungarian grandmother in an intimate photographic exchange magically rendered in a large print. It was about that point I was ready to vomit and stopped reading. I don't get it. I know he goes on for several hundred words to explain his reasoning, but I'm sorry, I'm just struggling with that one. But as Glyn has said twice in the last 5 minutes, it's art, it's subjective.
Well, and it doesn't mean it's right.
As well. But as he said, you know, he has been universally criticised for his decision in awarding this the top medal in the or award in this competition or whatever it is.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on it?
So what we've seen. So this guy Prince, who copies other people's work, but and calls that art.
Yep.
This woman scribbles on. In fact, it's not even her art. It's somebody else's art that she submitted because it's this woman who did the scribbling and stuff.
Yeah.
So it should be that person who won the award, but that's considered a portrait because it's a representation of somebody because they doesn't have to be somebody as part of the soul of the person as opposed to the outside of the person.
Right.
Well, I think the technical term's bullshit.
I'm with you on that.
It's just, you know, I read an article the other day where if you went to an art gallery opening 25 years ago, there was an image, might be a photo, might be a whatever. And what you'd see, the date it was taken or done, and maybe the city it was done, and possibly the title.
Yeah.
And that was it. Yep. Everything else, you had to work out yourself.
Yeah.
Now, they put nonsensical pieces of crud and a 57 bloody page essay to explain the nonsensical piece of crud to give it as narrative.
Yeah.
Well, a picture is no longer worth 1,000 words. It's worth 10. And they write the other 990 down next to it.
Yeah.
I thought it was quite a good picture worth 1,000 words in my ass. And now they put 990 words down to it, next to it, trying to explain what the photo is.
Yeah. Which means that as a visual medium, you have failed as a storyteller.
Exactly.
You know, if the whole point of, well, certainly photography is to tell a story, then you shouldn't need the 990 word essay.
Exactly. And even if it needs explaining, you shouldn't explain it because everyone should take their own thoughts and feelings from it, not just reading those words and going, okay, that's what it is, and then looking at it based on what it's supposed to be, not what you might interpret it as.
Yeah, yes.
You should look at art and interpret it your own way, not necessarily only the way the person who said.
That's right. If it's meant to be subjective, then it's up to you to come up with your own interpretation.
And you can either like it or dislike it. But so that leads me perfectly on to my first piece for the week.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the Parkin Drawing Prize.
Okay.
Drawing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a prize called the Parkin Drawing Prize. It's also worth $20,000.
Right.
And this one was awarded to someone who cut up some carpet and hung it over a piece of string.
What?
Yeah. Perfectly in keeping with the Oliver Cotton Prize, Portrait Prize, the drawing prize is cut up pieces of carpet hanging over a piece of string.
Right.
Yeah. And the judge on that one said that it was a challenging, brave, and impressive piece.
Oh, what? What?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
What's brave about it?
Yeah, well, you brave.
The fact that you might have died under an avalanche of carpet offcuttings.
You're brave in the fact that you put in some offcuttings into a drawing prize. That's pretty brave. You have the balls to do it, you know.
Next.
So drawing to me is not just about pencil and paper. I'm using a knife and carpet and hanging it in a space to achieve the same ends. Well, not really. No. I can photocopy a drawing. I can put a frame around a drawing, and I can sell multiple copies of it easily. So the guy who the prize is named after said, well, I wouldn't have chosen it. Which is kind of good. Oh, my wordy and my lordy. Dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. So a couple of things that's been going on in my feed this week is my fellow Elincrom ambassador, Mark Watson, who's in a extreme sports photographer,
right,
traveling into Turkey,
right,
and not allowed to carry lithium batteries on board the plane.
Okay,
so your camera bat, but you're also not allowed to check them.
Hey,
yeah, because you haven't been able to put lithium batteries into your luggage for a long time.
Right,
so that's a given. Don't pack your lithium batteries. You have to take them on board.
Right.
Well, now, if you're going to Turkey or coming back from Turkey, you can't put them on board either.
So what are you supposed to do with them?
Exactly. Toss them at the airport.
Oh, that's ridiculous. No one's going to do that.
It's what's happening.
No one's going to do that.
It's happening right now. It happened to him this week.
Seriously?
So no lithium batteries, no power packs for your phone, no flash battery packs, no anything to do with lithium batteries.
People will just go back to putting them in their luggage and putting it under the plane.
And, of course, yeah, that's where the fires start. The plane goes down.
But people will do it. If they're going to be this stupid, people will do that. Like, it's not like you're going to throw away a, you know, $80 to $100 camera battery just because, you know, these numbnuts don't want you to carry it on the airplane.
So someone on my Facebook page came up with a interesting point that maybe it opens up. If these things continue and it gets more like this all around the world, there'll be a resurgence in NICAD batteries for cameras.
Oh, okay.
Start remaking the old technology because didn't have the same issue the lithium stuff does.
Right.
So I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, right.
So that was one. And also this week, also the TSA out of America, the whatever they call themselves, well, the acronym stands for separate screening of cameras now. You know, you've got to pull your laptop out of the airport. Yep. You've now got to pull out all your camera gear.
Oh,
and have that screened separately.
God.
That's going to speed up the process, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And have you look at photographers, and they're going to inspect photographers a hell of a lot more carefully, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, that's
going to be enough. It just seems like everyone in the world is trying to make travel harder and harder and harder all the time.
Well, I think they're called terrorists.
But, yeah.
So, I mean, it's cause and effect. Yeah. So I understand, we want to try and make things safe, but at the same time, the potential, I mean, the actual volume of successful attempts at anything is so minuscule. Not saying it's right, there's an awful lot of people inconvenience for a very small percentage of happening. But that's where they have their success, isn't it? If they can make the Western world more difficult, it's not just, if you were living in England back in the 70s and 80s, and you were walking through London, you had some rubbish. Well, there's no rubbish bins,
right?
Because that's where the IRA terrorists put their bombs.
Yeah,
it's hard to mail a letter for the same reason. It's not something new. There's been inconveniences, and I guess as someone put on my Facebook wall, it's possibly better to be inconvenient than dead.
Yeah, true.
Possibly. Yeah. That's a fair reason. Yeah. But just sort of point it out, if you are traveling, start paying attention to this lithium stuff. I mean, so coming back from Perth, I had half a bag full of lithium batteries. I mean, big ones. I'm talking half a house brick size lithium batteries for my big Elochrom kits.
Yeah.
And yeah, they were scanning my bags, pulling things out, double scanning all the time. That's just a local domestic Australian flight. So.
Wow.
I came across another cool little thing from our friends at Godox.
Oh, yeah?
They're about to release a transmitter and off-camera flash for smartphones.
What?
So if you've got a smartphone, this will be a trigger to trigger. Not only does the thing have its own flash built into it, but it's also a transmitter. It will also fire off other Godox flash guns via your iPhone.
Wow.
So
is it just using like a slave mode? So it sees the flash of your smartphone and triggers off that?
I don't know. I didn't read the article.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Excellent.
I'm sure there's lots of actual information there at some point.
Yeah.
I'm imagining.
Wow.
but it's something I've wanted for ages, is to be able to off-camera flash with my iPhone.
With your phone.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. All part of the if people can cut out a piece of carpet and call it art, I can take a photo of it.
Exactly.
Just as well. And just talking about controversy in photography, there's a photographer going through the mill at the moment. Called Suvit Data.
Yeah.
Or Data. So he's been caught out doctoring and adding other people's work into his images and everything else. But this guy's won a huge amount of prizes worldwide. So he's won the Getty Images Editorial Grant, an Alexia Foundation Award, Visura Photojournalism Grant, the Lens Culture Magnum Photos Award, and among others. And it turns out a whole bunch of his early stuff was all just copy and pasted. Yeah, well, yeah, stealing bits of other people's stuff.
You realise this is the very same guy we were talking about only half a dozen episodes ago about the photograph of the 14-year-old sex worker.
That's it, yeah.
It's the same guy.
Same guy. He's on that reality TV show in Europe at the moment on photography as well.
Okay.
The same guy, and he's been done. Part of that sex worker, the other photos are some of them are real, some of them have been added to, and that's where the whole thing
started.
But there's a very interesting article where he's been interviewed by Time, where you can read, and he goes through and explains and talks and stuff, and it's worthwhile having a read just to see how people can fall into this trap, especially as a young, starting out photographer. So
yeah, right.
Yeah. Well. And my last piece is to say goodbye to the lovely lighting company of Bowens.
What? Why?
Well, they're gone. They're discontinued. They're stopped.
Why?
They're dead. Well, they're here. This is them. Yes, we're dead. And Chinese brands killed us.
Wow.
So the people have been knocking off their tech and building cheaper versions of the same thing are gone. Yeah.
Wow.
So Elochrom and Bowens were two of the biggest companies going around for forever and ever.
Yeah. And, was it 94 years for Bowens? Wow.
Yeah. So here's the thing. At the very end of that article on the Godox flash, because they're blaming, because Godox is one of the companies for knocking them over. While this product may not be for everyone, it's definitely an example of creative innovation, something the 94-year-old Bowens was lacking.
Yeah.
That's the end of that. So that was interesting. So it's just, it's shifts and changes all the time, isn't it? You know, there's nothing stays static, and if you stay still, so.
That's it.
So speaking of, I'm working on a brand ambassadorial role for another company.
Oh, okay.
Which, if it works out, if it happens, I may even give up photography.
Seriously?
Possibly. You never know. I might devote a lot of time to this and maybe stop workshops at the very least. I don't know.
Yeah, right.
We shall see.
When will you be in a position to talk about that?
Sometime in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, right.
So I'm working through all the details now, and it's mostly because if I'm going to do this thing properly, it's such a time commitment.
Right.
I might be able to still do tours, but maybe not so much, or maybe a few workshops, but nowhere near as many sort of things. So we'll see. We'll just have to say. So it's photographic related.
I figured it would be.
But it's a whole new world.
Right.
The whole new world.
Wow.
For you and me. So, yeah, so stay tuned. And when it's announced, there'll be codes for everyone to go and try it, maybe.
Oh, okay.
And get in, maybe see if it's something that's of interest to them.
Right.
We're going to change photography. We're going to change photography forever.
Right. Okay.
Ever. So yeah. So really cool. So
wow.
Stay tuned. So that's it for me for this week. I've got bugger all else.
Fair enough.
And so it's just like our listeners like the episode, short and sweet, and mostly lacking content.
So what do you got on for the rest of the week?
It was Friday tomorrow, isn't it?
Yes.
So I've got a workshop tomorrow.
Yep.
Got the weekend off with the kids, a one-on-one on Monday.
Right.
And then I think a workshop the next weekend again. So, yeah, cool. A lot.
Excellent.
Maybe a round of golf.
Right.
Stops rain.
Fair enough.
So that's it. That's all I got.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, mate. Well, you enjoy your weekend and...
And yourself too, and everyone else.
Yeah. And we'll talk with you next week.
Yeah, absolutely.
See you,
bye, everyone.
Bye.
See ya.
I suppose before we wrap up, we should have another instalment from David Marland. What do you got for us this week, David?
Thanks, Bruce. This time, I again digress, and I hope you see some method in my madness. The book I'm looking at is called Nature Revealed, and is a book I bought at an exhibition of the landscape paintings of Eugène von Girard in about 2011. Now, this isn't the El Cheapo pamphlet you pick up for a couple of dollars at such an exhibition. This was a bit more substantive hardback work. Now, I'm using this book as an example of the exhibition genre, not to urge all six of you to go out and get it. You see, I think it's useful to occasionally go to an exhibition of a painter's works for inspiration or comparison in my photography. I also find it curious as to how artists interpret the world, even those attempting a form of realism. I also find it rather ironic that painters, or when their works are not entirely accurate, have the inaccuracies dismissed as artistic license, while a photographer may be utterly pilloried for doing the same thing. Now, von Girard painted widely in the 19th century and is of a particular interest to me as he painted a lot of Western Victoria. And he was probably the most significant predecessor with a European view of the light before the Heidelberg School of Roberts and Streeton and Co. started to interpret the Australian light. But there's something else about von Girard that's interesting for a photographer. He trained at the Dusseldorf School of Painting, which was focused on a highly detailed landscapes, but also had a touch of the fanciful to it. The school was influential, particularly at the United States at the time, and you might recall the famous Washington crossing the Delaware as one example. Have a look at that picture in the ice flows. Look at how well they are depicted. Whether Washington stood the way he did on the deck is another question. Von Girard, on the other hand, was also influenced by the works of the scientist Alexander Humboldt, who is said to have invented nature. You see, until Humboldt, nature was just something that just happened in the background. Humboldt showed that geology, geography, topography, and climate all interacted with the flora and fauna of a place. We now call this an ecosystem and think nothing of it, and think of it as normal, actually, but in the early 1800s, this was radical stuff. Now, as a consequence, von Girard was meticulous about his record of the geology and geography of his subjects and built up his image from there. As a photographer, I can visit many of the sites that von Girard painted in plein air, which was also very radical. If you live in Victoria, you can go to where he set up his easel at Tower Hill near Warrnambool, for example. The romantic / fantasy of some of his pictures are the nature of the skies with clouds, which, although realistic, they're deliberately created to enhance the subject, as is the light. I mean, the clouds are nearly always those nice, puffy, fluffy cumulonimbus that you see in the autumn at all times of the year, with this lovely light blue in the sky. There are a few places depicted in the evening where the evening light is, to be honest, from a totally different direction to what you can get in a photograph. In other words, he moved the sun. And to add that touch of the romantic, there's often an idealistic settler or Aboriginal somewhere in the forward or middle ground to emphasise scale. And another thing I've noticed too is that some waterfalls are, of course, very dry for most of the year, so all of them are depicted in full flow. Now, these things aside, going to an exhibition like this, to me, is inspirational for my photography. And to see how the artist is composed within the frame, what is prioritised, especially of landscapes, that you're familiar with and can visit, I think is very useful. Now, this book is about 280 pages. It features a biography, a rationale of the artist's approach, lavish reproductions of the artist's work. And it's one of those things that's ideal for reading or dipping. Now, unfortunately, this particular work, Eugène von Girard, Nature Revealed by Ruth Pullen, is not available. And this seems to be the fate of a lot of exhibition books. But I do urge everyone, go to an exhibition to get some inspiration and consider the book of the exhibition. Not just the old cheapo pamphlet. If they have something more substantial with plenty of pictures, and it may be something to do with portraits or abstracts or whatever, it's worth taking away and thinking about it. Cheers.
Awesome. Thank you, David. It's funny that you should bring a painter into the series of book discussions, because while we were in Paris, we went and spent 3 hours, I guess, in the Musée d'Orsay. And there were some works there, some by well-known artists like Cézanne and Renoir, and there were some other paintings by artists I'd never heard of that really struck me, just how beautifully some of these painters used, you know, light, you know, their depiction of light in a painting. I guess it's, you know, maybe something as you grow older, you just start to appreciate this stuff more. It was not something I'd ever really given a lot of brain cycles to in the past. And just walking through the Musée d'Orsay, just on a couple of occasions, it really struck me. I was like, wow, that is a beautiful depiction of light. And one of them was, you know, it was like cows in a field. It was like nothing, you know, super amazing in terms of content, but the way it had been painted, it just really grabbed me. I took a photo of that. I will dig that out and I'll throw it in the show notes just for the hell of it. All right, that'll do it for this week, and until next week, take care.
ShutterZincPodcast.com.
AnotherAudioTier.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@ShutterZincPodcast.com.